יהיו לרצון נמרפי בגיון ליבי לפניך, אדוני, צורי וגואלי. May the words of my mouth and thoughts of my heart be acceptable before you, O God, my rock and my redeemer. Shalom all, and welcome to our Kosher Torah school teachings in this series in the Kabbalistic teachings of Rabbi Yosef Haim, the famous Ben Ish Hai of Baghdad, from his book, Dat Utfuna. I am, of course, your host, Ariel Bar-Tzadok, and you find me in the Kosher Torah school online, of course, at www.koshertorah.com. Erev Tov, Buenas Noches, Bienvenidos, in all the languages. I only wish I could say it in all the languages of all the people we have here. Unfortunately, my French is not what it needs to be, and all a whole bunch of different other languages, Portuguese as well. But anyway, I welcome you all. And we are now in the sixth class in this series. We're in the 19th chapter of Sefer Dat Tefuna. Two lessons ago, actually, in lesson four, I believe we began to introduce some questions. And the questions that the Ben Ish Hai is taking, of course, he is reading from Rabbi Chaim Vital's book, Sha'arei Kedusha. And of course, we have the teachings, the lessons of Sha'arei Kedusha available on koshertorah.com. So, anybody who's interested can go and take those classes from the original Sha'arei Kedusha. And this is the Ben Ish Hai's rendition of it and review of this material. And the questions that Rabbi Chaim Vital asked in the Sha'arei Kedusha and Ben Ish Hai is here enumerating is very simple. What is life all about? Why are we here? Why are we created in a body and soul? Why do we have a good inclination and a bad inclination and all this other kind of stuff? Now, these are fundamental questions. They are philosophical questions, but don't you ever underestimate the power, or I should say the importance, of philosophy. Philosophy we would call contemplation. The Kabbalah, philosophical Kabbalah, is called the theoretical or the Kabbalah Iyunit. All right. Now, somebody's asking a question off of the side here, throwing me a shortstop question here, asking, can a clone have a soul? Well, as you remember, we've been describing the levels and definitions of soul in multiple different variants. Remember we spoke about five levels of soul, Nara Nachai, we refer to it, Nefesh Ruach, Neshama Chayin Yechida, each is being different levels of consciousness. The life force energy of the body, of course, is the Nefesh. Remember we spoke in our last class about Tatz Ham, the inanimate soul, the vegetable soul, the animal soul, and then the human, the speaking soul. All right, that's pretty much what we're referring to here. So a clone would, of course, have a life force energy to it. Would it have an independent and unique soul? I suspect yes. I cannot see why not. Now, remember something about a clone. In spite of whatever anyone might say, a clone is not you. Well, it's not the person. It's the same genetic material. But here is the issue. How and with what do we identify an individual? Biologically or psychologically? The answer, obviously, is psychologically. We can take the genetic material of anybody in history, anybody great, anybody small, and clone them. That clone will grow up with a complete different identity, a different personality, different experiences, different behavioral influences, and will grow up to become a completely different person. And just because they have identical genetic makeup does not mean in any size, shape, or form, they will even have a similar psychology. Now, you want to add some curiosity to the mix? Let's throw in astrology. All right? Regardless of whether or not it's real or not real, whatever, let's just throw it in for theoretical discussion. Let's say you are born under whatever sign you're born under. You're an Aquarius, whatever. And now I'm going to take your clone, me and Dr. Frankenstein. We're going to mix up your clone. And your clone is born in Sagittarius, right, in December. Well, what then is the sign of your clone? Oh, your clone was born in Sagittarius, but you were born in Aquarius, but you're a clone. Yeah, okay, so you see, all these different types of things which don't match up. I believe that if a human life is born, that it has to it more than just animate life force, that it has what we would call a soul. And as such, that doesn't mean that it is a spark of your own soul. It could be somebody else's, something, some whatever. These are not experiences with which we today can speak with any sense of familiarity, because really it's a new pioneering area. Will we ever clone? Will it ever become a norm where in which this will have to be addressed in theology? That's a good question. Here's another one, all right? This person who asked this question, it's a woman, she says, her husband asked the question. Okay, madam, here's a question. Let's say we clone your husband, and then your husband goes out of town, and his clone comes and wishes to have relations with you. Well, after all, he is your husband, isn't he? Well, is he? Now you have questions of adultery. And I have all kinds of fun stuff coming in. So these are the areas. Now, why am I even taking the 2 minutes to digress to discuss this? Because when we go into Torah, when we go into Talmud, we endeavor to look at possibilities, to discuss the parameters of what those possibilities could be, look for fundamental principles, and to extrapolate from principles into various applications, and from such, draw conclusions from, if you will, the realistic foundations of what we have into any application that could be applicable. And therefore, the discussion of clones and things like that, well, we have just gone in that direction. And it's important for us to understand. Because getting back now to our material, when we want to discuss the nature of the human soul, our reality, in our previous class, we said that our higher selves, our truer selves, is from a higher domain, from a dimension which we here call Biria, which is actually outside of what we call the heavens and the earth, which we refer to as the lower dimensions of Yetzirah and Asiyah. So if our source is from somewhere outside, what on earth are we doing here? Well, I already answered that question, that there are elements and aspects within us which need to learn a lesson. So if I need to learn a lesson, well, what lesson is it? Let's just say it's a minor lesson. Well, I, in my totality, do not need to devote my entire attention, focus, and time to learn this minor lesson. What if I could take that part of me that needs to learn that lesson and, if you will, put it into a environment, circumstance, where in which it can then learn that lesson and that spark of me then be reabsorbed into me? Well, we can't do that psychologically or physically within the context of our present reality. But we believe that there are other higher realities, and that that which we call our higher self indeed can and does do this. And that part of our higher self, that little itsy-bitsy part that needs to learn something, that's you and me. And that's why we come down to this world to learn what we need to learn, so that we can eventually be reabsorbed into our higher original self. So on that note, let's go into our text. Let's go back and answer all of those questions that we wrote about at the beginning of this gate. Again, the Ben Ish Chai is quoting Rabbi Chaim Vital. Hine, Ur Machtzav HaNeshamot, Pinimi Ve'Elyon Me'Ur Machtzav HaOlamot HaMalachim. That which we call the domain of souls, we said is internal or superior to or above the domain of what we called the angels. V'lachen hem mishartav. Therefore, the angels are the servants of the souls. Now, that's an interesting concept. Are you telling me that the angels are the messengers for my higher self? I thought the angels served God. Where does my higher self fit into all of that? I don't get the picture. Well, let's apply it within the context of the common mythology that many people are familiar with. Within common mythology, there is a difference between what we call an angel and an archangel. Needless to say, there is no concept of an archangel in any Torah Jewish sources. There are numerous different races and species of angels, and they are enumerated in Kabbalistic sources like the Zohar and even by Maimonides in his famous code. Those lessons, are available on koshertorah.com in our free audio library. But getting back to the point here, the higher selves are the conduit and intermediary between God and the angels. So in the mythology of those who developed concepts and ideas about angelology, they mistook the identity of the souls and referred to them as archangels. We have discussed the souls and referred to them by a different name in earlier literature. Go back into our classes from the book of the Hechalot, 3rd Enoch, and we are referring to the Metatrons. We are referring to the Neshamot. This is the original source of our souls. And Metatron is said to be the one in charge of all the realm of the Malachim. He's the boss. But we learned that Metatron also was not an individual, but a race of beings. And that's how Enoch was able to ascend above to become one of the Metatrons, which just meant that his lower self reconnected to his higher self. And that was that. But there's a whole bunch of different things when we put all the pieces together. But let's just understand that we have God as revealed as the Creator, and the Creator is known to us by his names, and the names we refer to as the functions of the names, and that's what we call the Ten Sefirot. They are revealed through and energize and channel down through what we call the collective souls. Interestingly, that is why that it is said of Metatron that God's name is in him, because he is called the Small Hashem. Remember that all of the souls are part of the collective whole. They're a hive mind. So don't think of all the souls as being independent entities. No, they're all part of the greater whole. You and I in the higher realm are part and parcel of the same, in quote, body. Not that the body is physical, but part of the greater unity of whatever it is to be human. Someone questions here, are we destined to become Metatrons? Yes. How long it's going to take? That all depends. Some might get there sooner than others. How's that? But that's what we would call the realm and the domain beyond the world to come, and that's spoken of in other places. How many Shemitot and how many other epochs of time? Who knows? But let's get back to what we're focused on here. Ki al yado nimshacha aratam v'chayutam me'ora ein sof aleihem. The angels receive their radiance and their life and their blessings from the souls, and the souls, of course, from the 10 sefirot. And this is the secret of a verse quoting from Isaiah, Hen aralim tsa'aku chutza. Behold, the angels are crying outside. The angels referred to in this verse are called the Ar-Alim, or Er-Alim, according to some. The Ar-Alim is one of the 10 species of angels enumerated even by Maimonides in the Mishnah Torah. And they are a species whose job it is to perform a function. They do not evolve. They are who they are. That's the difference between the Neshamot and the Malachim. Humans and what we are evolve. The Malachim do not. Many of you might have heard of a very famous science fiction novel. Shame, shame, it was never made to a movie. Arthur C. Clarke's Childhood's End. Very interesting idea. And if you remember before we began recording, we were speaking about all the ideas and concepts and thoughts that were popping up in the 50s and the 60s, especially in the science fiction genre. This is one of them. Go read the novel and you'll see the relationship of the extraterrestrial entities who come to Earth and those who they serve. And I don't think Arthur C. Clarke was a Kabbalist and had access to this material that we're learning now, but it is interesting how what he wrote interestingly mirrors or reflects it. It's one of those moments. But moving right along, another question in text. Why did the angels mate with men if they have a hive mentality? No, human souls have the hive mentality. Angels, you got different ones. That's another thing, and we'll get to that in a minute. So, the issue here is this. There is I use the word mechanics to reality. Energy. Remember a great rule of energy. Energy is always cyclical. It is never monolithic. Energy just doesn't flow in one direction. It always circles around. So, religiously speaking, God's energy comes down the earth and somehow or another it bounces back up and goes back up. In the Kabbalistic traditions, we refer to descending energy and ascending energy. Or Yeshar and or Chozer. Maim Nokbin and Maim Duchrin, all different kinds of names to refer to it. In other words, the energy comes down to us from the Creator, through the Neshamot, through the Malachim, into the worlds. And from the worlds, the energy has to go back up in order to maintain the cycle. Have any of you ever seen the science of lightning? I've seen this in some of the science programs, and it's actually rather profound. Where does a lightning bolt strike? They have been able to show that there are actual streams of some kind of electrical energy rising up from the ground that literally reaches up off the earth into the sky. I don't know how high or whatever, and somehow, somewhere, the lightning bolt connects with it and charges, brings the energy straight down. So whichever of this energy rises up from the earth, that's the one that makes connection, boom. If that energy connection does not rise from the earth, the lightning bolt doesn't come down. So in other words, you have to have the power from below in order to make connection with the power from on high. And I give this as a reality in nature and apply it exactly to what our lesson is here. You have heard me teach here at Kosher Torah School in numerous forms for literal decades that we are obligated to do from our side of things. And we're going to get to this within this paragraph right here, the secret of what's called Tenu Oz L'Elokim, give strength to God. In other words, we're part and parcel of creation. What we do matters. And therefore, even though you and I might be, in our own eyes, insignificant little nothings, well, the insignificant little nothing that you and I can do can make all the bit of difference in the world. And that's the important issue that we always must focus on. So let's go on. Ki kesh'ein nimshach min ein sof shefa l'neshamot ha'pnimiim, when there is no radiance from the ten sefirot that are radiating down to the realm of the souls, then chasira hashpa'atam, then the angels are also going to equally lack an essence of energetic radiance because they are external to the souls. Therefore, it says here, tsa'aku bizmana churban l'chayutam chutza meha neshamot. Therefore, the angels cried out at the time of the destruction of the temples for their nourishment. All right, they are external to the souls. Now, it's interesting they speak about the Khorban of the destruction of Jerusalem. We are all very familiar, right? Matter of fact, as a time stamp here, we are in the week prior to the Tisha B'Av fast, which commemorates the destruction of the temple. And if you really want to get a good insight and understanding of what really went on in the days of the Second Temple, the corruption, the infighting, what the sages called Sinat Hinam, I would think the best source of information is to read the writings of Josephus. They are readily available in English, and they are shocking. Josephus even makes a very interesting comment. He states that prior to the destruction of Jerusalem, he says that there were chariots seen in the skies. And he introduced it with, said, people didn't see this with their own eyes, no one would believe it. And it was said that in the middle of the night, weeks before the destruction, somehow, somewhere, the internal gates of the temple were somehow opened and a voice was heard saying, come, let us leave this place. Which gives the indication that these malachim, who were the, if you will, spiritual guardians, were told to abandon it to its fate. Very interesting. That's what Josephus says. So, when there are problems, lack, disturbances, imbalances of energy from below, that therefore lead to a disconnection to above, this creates all sorts of imbalances. Now, for those of you, go study things like meteorology and weather. Why do we have big and major storms? Usually they are to re-establish a sense of balance that has been lost in some element aspect of temperature inversions, high fronts and low fronts, all this stuff. Well, these things happen in the spiritual domain as they happen in the meteorological domain. Remember I said things being what I call mechanical, following the same order and pattern? That's what we've been learning through all these lessons that we say every world has within it, each and all the details of every other world. So therefore, like Duties of the Heart taught us, by learning the ways and realms of science and nature, we learn about the ways and realms of ourselves. And it gives us insight into understanding the nature of this flow of energy and how everything influences everything else. Lachen, therefore, lo yirdu litlabesh gam hen bo'olam hazeh baguf. Because these messengers are at a lower level than the souls, they are one level, one dimension further removed from the source. And therefore, they do not come into this physical world in physical bodies. They are the energetic energies behind the forces, but they should never take physical form. They can't handle it. Ki behechrech hayu ne'abdim alidei klipot. Because it would be, by definition, that they would be lost to the powers of the klipot. Let's explain. Energetically speaking, those entities which we call messengers do not have the energetic balance within their nature to live under what we would call the pressure of that energy called the klipot, the husks or the shells. You want an application? How's this? Think about the ocean. Think about deep sea divers. Think about something called the bends, if you are familiar with the concept. We cannot go down under water too far without the pressure of the water literally crushing us. Indeed, even things like submarines can only go down so low before the water pressure against the solid metal of the hull could snap and crush it. This is a big, big deal. So when certain entities come down into this world, some of them cannot handle it. Okay? He states here again, ki afilu neshamot panimiim, even the neshamot souls, meaning us, which are internal at a higher level, ein behem koach la'amot b'pnei klipot, kol shekin hem. Even we have a problem dealing with these powers of these forces, all the more so then. And he says, the evidence and proof of this is the Nephilim, like we discussed from the Enochian literature. Those malachim, those angels who decided that they were going to come down to earth, they were going to serve in the form and function of fallen man. They were going to prove God wrong, so they thought. They were going to come down here and help fix things. They decided to come down, and they were lost in this world and in the world to come. Now again, a person in text is saying here, well, what about the angels Michael and Gabriel and Raphael, who were able to take human form and met with Abraham as the three angels standing around him? Oh, they took human form, did they? And who says that that is what they did? May I suggest you read Maimonides, who will state that the three, in quote, angels who Abraham saw were indeed in a vision and not physical. You might, well, aha, what about the angels who went down to Sodom and Gomorrah? Well, again, all different types of interpretations and understanding if these were physical or in a vision. Differences of opinion, differences of ideas. But any and all of these entities to come down to earth into this dimensional plane is a very difficult challenge. Very similar to like a human being trying to go underneath the ocean and standing under the pressure of the water pressure. So somebody says, did he prepare food to feed a vision? Some say the entire concept of preparing the food and the meal. According to Maimonides, that, again, was all in a vision. It's Maimonides. There are other opinions. That's just the way it is. How did Sarah see the angels? She, too, is a prophetess. So, Again, this is in accordance to the opinion of those who hold like that. There are people who hold in other ways. And then there are other things that you have to deal with. Remember we said moments ago about how we deal with a situation? So let's argue. Well, let's not really. The term argue, I don't mean that to fight. What I mean is in a Talmudic mentality, is let's discuss, actually. From the Maimonidean point of view, all of these angelic encounters were in a vision. There was nothing physical. There are those who disagree with Maimonides, specifically Ramban Nachmanides. He said, no, they're all physical. Well, from Maimonides' point of view, we can say, if this is all a vision, then the concept of angels coming to earth and being subject to earthly forces is not really a problem because they never really came to earth. But from the Ramban's opinion, where in which they come to earth, then it was physical. Does he hold that they also are subject to these heavyweights problems? And the answer he would say, of course, is yes. Well, then, what according to his opinion is how they would be able to deal with it? And he gives his own ideas and opinions that they were only here for a temporary point in time and they were only here half and half. In other words, they weren't fully physical or whatever. And again, you have different ideas, different views, and different opinions. Don't ever get caught up in the delusion of the question, well, what really happened? What is the truth? Because bottom line, unless you show me something that I don't know, I'm going to take for granted that you and I both were not there at the time. We both don't know. All we have are the different opinions, the different interpretations. Our jobs are to become scholars. We learn what this one says. We learn this one. We learn this point of view, that point of view, this perspective of reality, that perspective of reality. We can draw our own conclusions and choose what we wish to believe. But we must always know, like we say in Hebrew, Ish machloket ledavar. There are different opinions. And we respect all. The gamlas siba gadola mezo, ki legeruatam lo ayuchilim lamshich shefa lekol olamot, ki im mebichinatam lachutz. So also, we learn and understand from this that souls, as great and high and mighty as they are only able to bring down the radiance to all the worlds from their level to below. So again, now with regards to the angels, the job of the angels is to bring down the energetic radiance from the higher dimensional planes outside of what we call the heavens and the earth, to influence. Okay? We have the physical universe, and we have what we call the invisible universe. Is that the realm of dark matter and dark energy? I don't know. I guess someday we'll find out. We refer to that universe as the Yetziratic universe. These, what we call messengers, the Malachim, all the different races of them, each one of them has a different job and functioning in that universe, which has, again, the messenger, the purpose and the function of supporting, nurturing, and providing nutrients for this universe. I don't remember what science fiction program it was that I saw once. It might have been The Twilight Zone, but maybe not. It had a very interesting premise where in which some guy got unfixed, out of sync with time. And he was like put in between the seconds. And he found himself in a very, very busy place with a whole bunch of what looked like maintenance and construction people. And he says, well, who the heck are you guys? And he goes, oh, we're the people who are behind reality, making sure that everything gets fit. You don't belong here. You're in between the seconds, right? So we made the last second happen. We're getting ready to make the next second happen. And you see them, you know, sweeping the streets, painting the house, you're going to get everything all ready. And again, it's just a very interesting concept to be able to see it portrayed in such a way. But this is not science fiction. even though it's portrayed in that way in this episode of whatever program it was that I saw, but throughout all the cultures around the world to this very day, in the Aboriginal cultures, they all know what we call earth spirits. You hear this all the time about the lake has its spirit, the forest has its spirit, the mountain has its spirit. Some will call it its god, lowercase g, or whatever. And to this very day, in cultures around the world, these earth spirits are known and in many ways communed with. So these are these, in quote, angels who are behind the scenes, whose job it is to control these things. Indeed, as we learn from the book of Daniel in the Bible, individual nations have their own messenger angel whose job it is to maintain that element of the human body politic. Even human politics is all being manipulated, as is nature itself. So the Bible teaches us. That's clear. You might be familiar with the very famous story in the book of Daniel. We discussed this in our Daniel classes, where in which Daniel was praying for an answer to something from God. And finally, the angel comes to him and says, here I am. And the angel, and Daniel says, where the heck have you been? I've been, you know, praying for weeks. He goes, oh, you're living in Persia, and the angel of Persia didn't allow me to enter his country. And I had to go and get, you know, somebody higher up to challenge him to let me have access. What the heck is all that kind of, what's going on here? If it wasn't the Bible, we would think this is reading of like some kind of a fairy tale. But it is the Bible. We don't think it's a fairy tale. We accept this as some reality. And it's revealing to us a very interesting insight into this other parallel world. We call it, again, Yetzirah. But these entities who are in control from the Yetzirah, who are in controlling our world, remember, they got a job to do. And they get their energy from the higher souls, who get their energy from God. But we, like the energy connector, have to be able to channel it down, because if not, we muck up the system. So continuing. ואפילו זה אי אפשר כי הם בעצמם אינו ממשיכים שפע לעצמם כמעל ידי הנשמות, like we said, with regards to the angels, they bring down the radiance from the souls. ואמתו, כי הנשמה שבעולם היצירה גרוע ממלאך שבבריאה. Is an interesting, curious statement, he says, that the neshama, soul, or a neshama level in the Yetziratic realm is less than a malach in the Bereatic realm. Wait a second. Didn't we just say that the neshamas are higher than the malachim? And if so, then how can a Yetziratic neshama be lower than a Bereatic angel? That's a trick question. Hopefully you're not going to get stumbled on that. Remember, we spoke about the different worlds, and the worlds are one dimension higher than the other. And in each dimensional plane, you have the subdivisions of all the others. Remember we said that in Yetzirah, we had all the different enumerations of the races of angels. We said there are 10 races of angels. Correspond them to the 10 Sephirot. Correspond them to the 4 worlds. Correspond them to the levels of soul that we are referring to. So just like you have in the world of Yetzirah, 10 Sephirot, 10 groups of angels, so they can be subdivided into the Atzilut, Bereah, Yetzirah, Asiyah, of Yetzirah. Take the 10, divide them into 4 groups. what they are is irrelevant for right now. We can then apply the same concept of souls and angels and forms, just like we could the four worlds. So even within the Yetziratic realm of angels, you have those higher and those lower, which we can therefore refer to as the Neshamot level in Yetzirah, the Malach level in Yetzirah. And equally, we can say the exact same thing about the higher dimensional plane called Beria. In Beria, 10 different levels, subdivided into the four different worlds, subjective to that one dimension. And we could say again, in that Beria, which is the general realm of Neshamot, you have higher Neshamot and lower Neshamot. And the higher Neshamot, we can call the Neshamot of the Neshamot. The lower ones, we can call the Malachim of the Neshamot. So, what Rabbi Chaim Ben Ish Hai are both saying here is that any and every level of Yetzirah is obviously going to be less than any and every level of Beria. And then he states here, Omnam, HaNeshama Shebeberia Gedola MeMalach HaBeria. Within, for example, the Bereatic realm, but we might say that the same rule applies in the Yetziratic realm, you have grades, gradients, levels. And the higher level is obviously always higher than the lower level. And being that we're enumerating and saying that the Neshamot are on a higher level than the Malachim, then in Beria, the Malachim are higher than in Beria, the Neshamot are always going to be higher than the Malachim. So as we subdivide, everything applies in the same format. And that's how we have to understand things. Moving right along. So, question in text, let's say. A Beriatic Neshama is still higher than an angelic in Beria. Yep, that's right. That is correct. So now, let's discuss the issue of the soul. Nitpe'er gedolat neshama. Let's talk about the greatness of the soul. Ki hi ur mit yaled v'nimshach meha es ur es esfirot atzman shelo al yedei amtza'i. That which we call the neshama soul, the Bereatic realm, we say is a light. And the word choice here is that is born from the light of the 10 sefirot itself without any intermediary level. And because we are, in quote, born from the light of the 10 sefirot of that realm called Atzilut, that realm is called our parents, and we are called their kids. And he states here, this then is the meaning of the Bible verse that states, you are the children of the Lord your God. Kihem bebechinatam keben mitahez be'aviv betachlit v'nimshach memenu. Because the neshama souls, as we say here, they are essentially like an aspect of a child which clings to its parent. And this is the element of that relationship. And this also, he states here, Zehu sod ha'avot hen hen ha'merkava. The teachings of the Talmud, which states that the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, it says they are the secret of what is called the Merkava. The secret of the Merkava isn't the Merkava, this chariot of ascent, we go up to heaven like in Enochid literature and all the rest. Well, not exactly. That's one way of interpreting it. But the concept and term Merkava, chariot, is related to the concept which we discussed in our previous class about the throne. The throne, or the Merkava, the only difference between a throne and a chariot is one moves and one doesn't, is that they are both, if you will, a place where in which something from on high is able to move and channel through that which is, in quote, below. So therefore, we speak of the patriarchs Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as being God's chariot. What does that mean? That God moved on earth through them and their influence. And I don't think that can be denied. I would say if you had ever to ask, who is the most influential human being to have ever existed? And of course, a Muslim would say Muhammad, a Christian would say Jesus, a Jew might say Moses, but I would say, what do all three of them have in common? The answer is, one way or another, all three of them were the students of or following in the path of Abraham. So Abraham is a very influential guy. The fathers, were what we call the chariot, through which the higher powers moved. Continuing, they are the Merkava, they are the chariot through for what? El Ura es a Sefirot, the light of the ten Sefirot, Haruchev Alehem, which ride upon them. Shelo alide amtsaut or acher, and without any other intermediary acting between them. So you have Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and actually there are 10 righteous souls enumerated, who in their Buriatic higher selves are the channel and force for the power of God here below. Vezeo sod Yisrael asher b'cha et pa'er. This again is the secret of the verse where he states, in Israel will I be glorified. Israel, notice it doesn't say here Jews, Israel. God chose Israel to be his hand, his tool, his hammer, his screwdriver, his wrench, his plunger, his whatever, to work here on earth. And therefore, we will see the wisdom in hand of God as he guides Israel. And again, when I say Israel, I'm being very clear not to limit this to a concept of Jews or Judaism, or for that matter, to the state of Israel today. The concept of biblical Israel and what Israel is spiritually is so far greater than that, that it would be wrong not to mention it. Continuing, ki lavush ha'adam hu teferato. So for example, a person's dress is their tiferet, their glory. They're looking good, right? They say the clothes make the person. So you look snazzy. So that's the concept of the garment. The souls being the garment to the light of the Sefirot. And it continues, hine. Ora neshamot, lavush l'ora es sefirot. The light of the souls are like the garments to the light of the ten sefirot. This then is the secret, and he quotes here another verse from Song of Songs. Dodi yored legano, my beloved descends into his garden. What is the garden? That's this world, symbolically speaking. Lirot beganim ulilkot b'shoshanim. Right? To go hang out in the gardens and to gather the roses. And he says, if you look at these four words, lirot beganim ulilkot shoshanim, you have a lamed, a bet, a vav, and a shin. That spells out the Hebrew word lavush. And lavush, we said, is the garment, because the souls of the righteous, all right, are fragrant like the smell of roses by their deeds in this world, and therefore they're able to become the conduit that cloaks the light of God within them. This then is the secret again of the verse from Deuteronomy, you who are bonded to God, to Hashem your God, are all alive to this very day. You're alive by the power of the light of the ten sefirot. That's not always true with everything else in creation. And again, it goes on with other verses, but okay, let's move on. Gam nitba'er inyan, hayetzer hatov v'hayetzer hara sheba'adam ma inyanam. Now, let's discuss the purpose of having a good inclination and a bad inclination. Do we really have inclinations for good or evil? Is there, I'm sure we've seen, whether in a cartoon, television program, movie, the little image that if and when somebody has to make a difficult moral decision, on their right shoulder pops up the image of a little angel saying, yes, do the right thing. And on their left shoulder pops up a little devil and goes, ah, 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 go do what you want, ha, ha, ha. All right, though, you know, this is our way of portraying this inner dilemma, which is part and parcel of our human experience. I don't think that it is natural for any human being to always choose good or evil. I believe that every single human being, no matter how good they are or bad they are, has elements of the opposite. And somehow, some way, and sometime does make a choice one way or another. I don't think that there are such things as absolutes. Everything is a matter of like a seesaw, a balance. This is, again, part of the test of what it is for us to be in this world. These two yetzirot, the word yetzir means inclination. That's always how it is translated. Maybe we should refer to it better as, instead of an inclination, temperaments, temptations, orientations, right? That which incline us to do this or that. These are nitosefu ba'adam zulat nishmato. These come as additional influences upon us above and beyond the soul. What does that mean, above and beyond the soul? Well, understand here your soul as your personality. Your personality does not define for you whether you are good or evil. Those are choices we make. We become inclined to or subject to the impression of one or the other. Our personalities might define for us how strong or weak we might be, how vital or lazy we might be, or what our orientation towards the world is. But good and evil are still external choices to personality. Behem ur me'or malachim, the light and energy which comes from the influence of the angels, that is called the Yetzer HaTov. And the light that comes from the domain of the Klipot is called the Yetzer HaRa. And that is Chutz El Yetzer HaTov. It's more external than the Yetzer HaTov, and therefore forms like a husk or shell around it. Let's explain. Good and evil. There is that element within us which looks at something above and beyond our own personal needs and desires. That's usually good. Not always. And then there is that which is intentionally and specifically focused on the individual. My good, my purpose, my needs, my desire. That's, again, not absolute, is usually referred to as bad. Serving physical needs as opposed to more intellectual or spiritual needs, that's considered bad. Serving the intellectual or spiritual needs as opposed to the physical, that's considered good. Now, we're all familiar with these concepts. I mean, there's nothing profound here. Think of your soldier who goes into combat, puts himself in harm's way to protect his fellow troops, who goes out there, fights, bleeds, God forbid, dies for his or her country. Now, obviously, they have done something great and heroic to their own personal harm. That's what you call the Yetzer HaTov, living for and acting for a higher purpose. So, practical applications for us in our everyday combat. You know you're getting unhealthy. You know that you're overweight. Your doctors tell you you got to take off some of those pounds because something's bad with your blood and your cholesterol and that and this and this and that. So what do? You know you really want that piece of pie. You really want that or this or this or that. Well, serving the body that says, good, that's the Yetzer Hara. Listening to the voice that knows better and says, no, I better not, that's the Yetzer HaTov. And that's the way these things supposedly work. Okay. Ach HaNeshama Atzma. The soul itself, this we say, is internal of all of these things. Liotam Panimi. And being that it is internal, Gam Kihi Nikret Atzmut Adam. The soul, the personality, the inner essence, we said, is internal, within, above and beyond both of these influences. And that's why we say it itself is the essence of the person. V'lechen yesh biyado koach, and that is why it has the power and the ability to choose whether to turn to whichever direction that it wants, right? To either go from the good or to the bad. Omnam, ikar netiyato el yetzer hatov, ki hu kadosh kamohu. The soul naturally feels more inclined to a higher principle, and therefore more inclined to turn to the yetzer hatov. And that's exactly what it does. The gam, ki hu samuch elav, because we say that the higher self is closer to the good. Because we say, again, the relationship of the higher self to the malachim is close. Therefore, the influence of the malach, which we say is the source of the good inclination, to the lower soul, it's closer to the higher self. And therefore, we feel better when we listen to that goodness within ourselves. Because there's something better about it. Ach, haguf, the physical body, ikad netiyato el yetzer hara. The physical body, its natural inclination is towards itself. And that's what we call the evil inclination. Because the physical body and serving it, we call these both of them, metzad hara, this is the bad, and they are close to one another. V'hine, b'chinat zot, and this is exactly where the fight, the struggle comes from within us, between our, if you will, our higher self and our soul, and our lower physical bodies and our physical desires. It's always that conflict. All right? Morals. That's the purpose of the test of life. Ki kevan sheneshama eino poelet mitzvot ela al yedei haguf. Now, the neshama, soul itself, it really doesn't do anything physical in this world other than through the intermediary of the body. It can't do anything good other than through acting through the body. Asher notel yoter el yetzer hara. But the body itself is more inclined, as we said, towards the evil inclination. And therefore, the higher self, the inner voice, has to overcome the lethargy and laziness of the body, which seeks its own interests. We have to overcome that. That's why we're here in school, in this world, to learn these lessons. V'hara nitpa'er, ki b'chirat ha'neshama yechola l'altot et yetzer ha'tov, ach li'oto tzarich l'pu'ilato ha'guf, yesh lo torach gadol l'achnia ha'yetzer hara. And therefore, for our higher selves within us to choose the good inclination, it's only natural, as we said, it's what should be done so that it can function properly through the body to do good. But it's always a struggle because the evil inclination doesn't always go along with it for whatever reasons of our humanity. And he states here, V'havin kol ze hetev. Understand all of this well. Ech echer ha'ptira, that after we die, there is no such punishment for the soul without the body until both of them come together again in life. And there's a whole big teaching and details about that, which is the concept of the resurrection of the dead, essentially to see, have we learned our lesson? Physical living is all fine. There's nothing wrong with physical living. We all have to eat and drink and sexually procreate and do all this stuff. But there are higher parameters, higher obligations, higher responsibilities. And therefore, we have to curtail our behaviors based upon that knowledge which makes us truly human. And that, of course, is the struggle, and that's why we're here on Earth, and that is what this class is going to end on. And then, Bezat Hashem, God be willing, we'll pick this up in our next class. So again, thanks all for joining me. I'm your host, Ariel Bar-Tzedok. Come see me online at the Kosher Torah School, koshertorah.com. See you all in our next class. God bless. Good night. Shalom.